Hello, and thank you for listening to PolitiTalk with Lane Palmer. Today we have Kaylee on the podcast. So Kaylee, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've come to have the political mindset that you do?
All right. My name is Kaylee. I grew up in Worcester, Ohio, sort of like a semi-rural small town in Ohio. I went to Wittenberg, small liberal arts college, and then from there, I worked in public service a little bit through an AmeriCorps contract and worked with nonprofit. Then I decided to go back for a nursing degree, and now I'm a ICU nurse with a cardiac specialty at a pretty big healthcare conglomerate. I'll refrain from saying specifically which one, but I live in Cleveland, so you can probably figure out by process of elimination which one that is. so that's, I guess, like just my quick resume. But when I first thought about politics, it's probably during the first Obama election. I believe I was in eighth grade at the time, and some of the kids I'd run around with, they had parents who were professors or affiliated with the College of Worcester, which is a pretty progressive campus overall. So like Joe Biden came to speak in town square and people were all riled up, and I was like, whoa, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, maybe I'll just think about that a little bit more. Then, you know, I'll be 18 in the next election. So, I voted for Obama when I could. After I turned 18 during that second term. And I guess, like, at that point, I kind of knew a little bit more about what that meant. I had this one really great teacher in high school, Ms. Reardon, who taught a current events class. And she would literally make us listen to NPR every morning at 7 a.m. before we came into class, because there would be a pop quiz. Mm. Just kind of like digging in to the issues and current events of the day definitely was a good practice to have. And then she just challenged us to think critically about issues. I mean, she definitely, there's no no sugarcoating it. Like, she was pretty liberal, pretty progressive. So I think she shook up some of the minds of some of my peers at that time, who just kind of were regurgitating their parents' more conservative viewpoints. I would say she just kind of made you think through it. And if you thought a certain way about an issue or an event, then you had to defend it. And if, you know, you could actually intelligently defend your stance, then she'd be like, okay, cool. Well, we don't agree on this, but I hear your points. So I know that some parents probably thought she was like indoctrinating us, but I think I benefited from that a lot. So I guess overall, like, I grew up knowing that my parents were Democrats, but mostly because they're both teachers. They're not super duper politically active. They just kind of knew that at a local and a state level that Democrats wanted to pass levies. Democrats are for education. They're for teachers. They're not just for cranking out degrees and then cranking out people to be like just another cog in a capitalist machine necessarily. Mm-hmm. So especially when they both teach in this like smaller rural district where there's a lot of old people who aren't willing to raise their taxes a little bit so that they can have a brand new school building or have better resources so that teachers are not forced to go into their own pockets to pay for school supplies and basic materials that they need every day. So that was my like initial exposure. But I don't know, I feel like I'm talking a lot still.
No, I think you definitely have a great perspective in regards to definitely education. It does seem as though that schools that do fall into a lot of those rural communities with the older population seem to have a really hard time passing levies and getting things done. I remember back in Springfield, there was a district, I think it was called Northeastern, where they didn't pass a levy for probably a majority of my lifetime, I would say. And I remember even in high school, they, because my cousins would go there, they would still like roll in those like TVs with like the VHSs because they just couldn't afford to even just have like a normal sized computer or like monitor in the classroom. But yeah, so your first election, you voted for Obama. What was your reasoning as to why you voted that way?
Overall, I think I just kind of had this idea in my head that I wanted to vote for the candidate who was going to try to do the most for the most people. And I remember at the time, like, some of my friends' parents, they're like, oh yeah, well, everybody's a liberal until they start paying taxes. And it's just like, all right, well, you know what? I think I can muster a little bit more taxation in order to try to get people, you know, more access to healthcare and improve schools and avoid wars and things like that. So I guess I was just kind of, I had this general Democrat versus Republican or a general sense of what those basic tenets were. And I just knew that it felt more exciting to be an Obama voter. And I just felt at that time, of course, like my understanding of who I was and what I wanted in a candidate aligned more closely with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, definitely. I remember, you know, speaking on regards to education, I was honestly terrified of Romney winning that year because he wanted to cut back on the FAFSA. And I knew that if he did that, I probably would not be able to have gone to a university because I grew up extra, extra poor. And that was like a huge, I wasn't able to vote, unfortunately, because I hadn't turned 18 yet when that election happened. But I was definitely watching it very closely due to that reason. So how did, if anything, your viewpoint change when you went to your university? Were you exposed to any new ideologies or anything that maybe you hadn't noticed before about society at large?
Well, I guess some things I became a little bit more radicalized on, or a little bit more of that. I guess I was exposed to topics, mostly, okay, let me backtrack a little bit here. So I grew up Catholic as well, and kind of casual Catholic, which is a term some people use where, you know, we go to all the major holidays, we go occasional Sundays, but I wasn't like always praying over dinner or going religiously every single Sunday to church. But growing up, you do have to take these catechism classes, and so you're exposed to some of the theology and just the basic like biblical lessons. But once you start heading into your teen years, you start learning about abortion before you're even taught about sex. So I was taken to this meeting one night where they had somebody from a pro-life organization come and speak, and they showed us this VHS tape all about the evils of abortion and interviewed women who deeply regretted their decision. They showed scary images of like an operating table and some of the instruments that are used. Did not talk about other less invasive forms of terminating pregnancy. So it was just all scare tactics, right? And they give us these little plastic fetuses and little pins with baby feet. It was a lot. And I was 13 years old, and my parents hadn't even given me a basic sex talk. And the only, I guess, like I had gotten the puberty talk in school, but there was never any, like, these are the basic mechanisms of creating a human life. from a biological standpoint, from a scientific standpoint. And so it was just a lot. And so ever since then, I was just kind of like, wow, But I know people, and then I grew up a little more. I'm like, I know people who are having sex. I'm interested in being sexually active. I wasn't afraid of like going to hell. Like, I wasn't completely scared out of it. But the more I started to kind of experiment and test boundaries, I was like, what is the big deal? You know, and like anybody can go to Walmart and buy a pack of condoms. Like, it's embarrassing and you do it kind of secretly, but you can still do it. And I guess from there, I just always kind of felt this little like chip on my shoulder about how just the abortion issue was something that the Catholic Church pushed so heavily. And yet they weren't, at least in my parish, they weren't actively doing things that supported people who are already living on this planet, right? Like, they weren't getting a group of teens together to go to a soup kitchen or go volunteer at nursing homes or like just do anything that would help to like educate and give agency to disenfranchised groups or these people that we should be like loving and I guess in their way like showing pity for. It was all just like little bursts of charity or let's get a group together, a group of kids who are financially privileged enough to go to Guatemala and pay like $5,000 to go and help build a school or something like that. It wasn't like any local grassroots stuff. And I just always found that so hypocritical. And even when I was going through like my confirmation process, like I brought that up. I kind of just did that to make my parents happy. It was like another box you check, like you go to first communion, you dress up like a child bride and it's weird. You're in second grade, but you drink the wine, you eat the cracker, you move on. And then same thing with confirmation. You go to a bunch of classes, you pretend like you care. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people did care, but then you move on and you go. So that's a roundabout way of saying that. When I got to college, I knew that I was interested in sociology. I started out as a pre-med major and I still took classes so eventually I could go to medical school, hopefully. But once I dug into my sociology classes, I found women's and gender studies classes. And I was able to read more books about just like the different waves of feminism and dig deeper into some of the legislation that has passed, like, you know, over the last 50 years. And then also, you know, have discussions in class with like-minded people or even people who weren't quite on the same page yet. But I had a great professor, Dr. Wright. I know like anybody who's been through Wittenberg's political science department has probably had her for one thing or another. She was just a rock star. So that was really great. And then I also had like service opportunities immediately in college. I started working with the Springfield Promise Neighborhood, which is this organization, which Lane, you probably know, but they are like the definition of taking, like, putting your money where your mouth is, like, hitting the streets, canvassing, getting kids to come in for summer programming and making sure that kids have access to food, community gardening programs, lead testing in the soil so that we're preventing young children from essentially poisoning themselves over the years. All these, like, extra supplemental educational programming. So, like, even though I knew I never wanted to be a teacher in the same sense that my parents were, like, I immediately became a teacher in those ways, leading reading groups and coming up with curriculum and, like, activities to help kids get engaged. So that eventually, like, rolled into my later AmeriCorps experience where I was, like, a guidance counselor for students who are first generation. Mostly Hispanic population. I was in Austin, Texas, but their kids from typically they'd have to meet the requirement for like free and reduced lunch just as like a starting point. But I mean, other kids could get involved if they wanted to, but like you were just saying with access to FAFSA funds, even just the application process itself is prohibitive. if there is a language barrier, if there is a literacy barrier, just internet access is a huge thing. So we just kind of took out the middleman. We were like FAFSA preparers for these kids. We figure out what types of post-secondary education they wanted to pursue, whether that was some kind of technical certificate, an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree. We just kind of help them build up resumes for those applications, help them with essays, help them just kind of figure out what are my options here. Because although, they have super hardworking family members, they just didn't have necessarily the example to kind of reflect like what they might want to do in their lives. So it was all just about like opening opportunities to them. So again, I feel like I'm rambling. Do you have any questions?
No, you're doing great. I think what I love most is that you literally talked about how it was so frustrating growing up in that religious mindset of, being taught one way and then doing another, and you literally just went out and did it, right? So it's like, if my church isn't going to be the ones to really focus in on the community and things that we can do here for other people, that's what I'm going to do. And I think that's just such a great, great call to your character and just who you are as a person. And then even now you've chosen a career where you are continuously helping people, in their time of need. And I think that's amazing. First of all, I guess my follow-up question to your stories though is, what is something that frustrates you in regards to any kind of, what's the word? Any kind of like counter argument you've been given about maybe even just like the programs that you work with. Maybe it's people who believe that we shouldn't have programs like these, or we shouldn't support causes like this. Like, how do you react to that situation, and then how do you have conversations with people like that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess a couple examples. So with regards to the educational and like poverty alleviation work I've done, there are a lot of people who will approach that issue. It's not to say that they disagree with the work that's being done at all. They're usually in favor of it, but there are these people who approach these issues with this bootstrap mentality, right? Like, I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and I'm going to make it. Everybody has equal opportunity. Well, that's just really not the case. It's not the reality of the world we live in. I think that people who make that argument, or the people who want these issues to be tackled using local or state funding more so than the contribution of federal funding to these programs, like if you're talking about education in general, then they're just not really looking at a micro assessment of these communities that need these types of services the most. So they're not actually considering the socioeconomic makeup of these communities, and the lack of income flowing into those systems. There just aren't resources to begin with, and they maybe don't realize, or they choose to ignore because it's not technically their problem, these systemic problems, or at the systemic level there are all these biases that have just been ingrained in the way that these like bureaucratic processes work, like gender-based, racially-based, they're ignorant, and they probably only care about what is immediately affecting them, their family, maybe their businesses, or their what they do for a living, right? Mm. They're like, why should I be taxed more to help poor kids? And I don't know that I have, like, other than just to defend and advocate for those, the populations that I work with. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't be a mind changer always, unless you just, like, show metrics or show literal, like, videos, pictures of things that are being accomplished. That was one thing that, like, when I was in AmeriCorps, we kind of ran into. We had to have the metrics to back up what we were doing in order to continue to get the amount of state and federal funding that the nonprofit was receiving. I was considered a coach. There's, like, a hierarchy within the nonprofit, and so I was considered, like, a temporary contract worker, right? But there were people actually on staff coming up with the programming. There was an entire grant writing team as well. So in addition to the grant writers doing their thing, looking for donors, writing applications for here and there, we had to enroll all of our students in a random control trial so that we actually had data to show that our kids were passing the SAT and ACT with a higher score than their average peer, or that they applied to more colleges, they got accepted to more colleges, you know, all of those things. So we had certain metrics that we had to meet in order to turn that over then to whatever entity was dangling the carrot in front of us, and be able to back up, you know, our methods. But the issue with that is it also kind of became a way of excluding certain participants. So when we had, I had to go and make a presentation to, like, every junior and senior classroom to try to get kids to enroll. But what we couldn't share was that for every, like, I can't remember the exact number, but let's say for every 10 students who applied, who could, you know, possibly meet the criteria for our program, we had to turn two away so that they could be used as, like, a control.
Mm.
And so I really took issue with that. I talked to my supervisor about it, and she said, honestly, I had the same hesitations, but because we need this data so badly because of the current administration, and I'm just going to say this was 2017-2018, so this was the previous administration. They're slashing funds left and right. They're slashing social programming. They're slashing funds for AmeriCorps, all that. So, so they just had to kind of build up their arsenal of that, like, scientifically backed data in order to keep going on. So I guess, like, but even now, I mean, you can spit numbers at people and it's not even guaranteed that they're gonna believe you. Like, that, if the last, like, few years has shown anything, it's that science apparently is up for questioning. So
yeah, well, I mean,
when it comes to social science research methods or any of the studies that we were trying to crank out with the Maya nonprofit itself.
Yeah, well, speaking of, it's like, what are some issues or topics that you're noticing, I mean, just today in general, that are really kind of concerning to you or things that you're kind of worried about?
Mm-hmm. Well, we could get into all of the pandemic, misinformation, COVID, mumbo jumbo. I feel like that is kind of waning, and I find it interesting that it is, even though cases are still popping up left and right. But I will say, from my standpoint at the hospital, they held out for a long time, not, like, liberalizing our visitation policy, and everybody who visits and everybody who works in the hospital still has to wear a mask. And that, but our numbers are declining. So I'd say like, that's a positive on that note. But I guess like just within this last week, of course, like the, potential overturning of Roe v. Wade is very concerning to me. Something that has been potentially possibly taken for granted by people, maybe of a younger generation. Just kind of accepted by a lot of people for like the last 50 years, other than those who are those, you know, like one issue voters, perhaps, or people who are really involved in, more like conservative sects of Christianity. I feel like in the last 5 years, more than ever, there's something like monthly, if not weekly, if not daily, about the ACLU defending reproductive rights or the potential for conservatives to want to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it's very scary. It's very scary. I think that those who need abortions the most are probably not going to be able to get them in, you know, over half the states in this country. And that's pretty horrifying. At this point, I just don't understand really how people don't understand the the definition of the word choice. Right? Because I remember having, I wouldn't say an argument, but it came up where this one girl who I didn't know super well, politics, not in the sense like politics had never come up, right? So I'd just known this person socially, and she said something just like, ugh, I can't imagine anybody wanting to kill a baby. My mom put me up for adoption. She could have just killed me, but she didn't. And you hear that kind of argument, you hear that rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And then I just said, I was like, I'm really glad you're here, you know, but she had that choice. Like, it was her choice to make. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that she did make that choice, but a lot of people do not have that choice. They cannot, they're in these situations where it would just completely upend their lives. They have the maturity to realize that maybe they do not have the resources to adequately care for a child at that time in their life. And that's just like, let alone the awful circumstances of rape, incest, if the fetus is not viable, just any of those things that are considered possibly, you know, like exceptions by some more conservative states. But the option needs to be there.
Yeah.
It needs to be there. And I personally, I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and say, like, I've taken Plan B. I haven't had to progress to the point where I had to actually make an appointment or anything, but I know many individuals who have, and it's not like people are just getting these willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. Right? There is nothing frivolous about going and having a procedure done or even taking the step to go and get a prescription for one of the less invasive, the pills. It's not good for anybody. And it's just really unfortunate that so many people make that their focus when they are choosing political candidates. And they're just not really thinking about the lives of the people who have to make that decision. And also I fear that if we take away take away the right to choose, then we're also opening the door, and these threats have already been made, but opening the door to limit access to healthcare services that, like hormone replacement therapy, any sort of gender confirming surgeries, these things that are also technically that may follow, you could argue that they fall under reproductive health, but they're also just for somebody's wholeness of person, just to be able to say, like, I am who I'm supposed to be. So the psychiatric and implications of that, you know, just I think it's a slippery slope. If we say no to abortion, then we can also deny tons of other people similar services, right?
Yeah, and I can definitely feel or hear the you know, the emotion in your voice, and I know that these topics especially are a pretty passionate one of yours. What would you say to people who are kind of just indifferent? I mean, people you've described before, right? Like, it doesn't really affect them necessarily. They may be, you know, in a spot where this doesn't affect them at all. What would you say to them to make them understand why they would need to care about these situations?
See, and that's so difficult. Unfortunately, I think people need to have an example that hits close to home for them to care. If they're at the point where they're not even on the fence about it, they're so decided in their position on this issue.
Yeah, so maybe just maybe it kind of puts the onus then on people sharing maybe their own stories, because then they're able to affiliate that with somebody they possibly know.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, destigmatizing the process of, like, seeking, or just destigmatizing abortion stories. Because the more it is, while there are lots of emotions wrapped up in it, it is still a medical procedure. It is something that we can talk about clinically. I thought I wanted to go to med school, I thought I wanted to be an OBGYN. I had shadowed OBGYNs. I was kind of like the in-house, like, WebMD for my friends, and like various, like, health and gynecological issues. They were like, what would you do about this? What should I do about this? And because I'm always, like, very comfortable talking about sex and about bodies. And anyway, so when I was in nursing school, I thought, oh, maybe I'd want to be an OB nurse. Well, the professor I had, she approached this topic by giving us all this very lengthy preface and sharing her own story. And for that, like, I really commend her, because it can't be easy for her to talk about, but this was clearly, like, a soapbox topic for her. So she told us about how she had had fertility issues, has had, like, a dozen miscarriages, and for that reason, she decided to adopt all of her 6 children. And essentially that was her way of saying, you know, if you can have a baby, you should. And then went on to give us just the most basic information about reasons, like clinical indications for termination of pregnancy and different methods. So there was, I mean, it was an okay lecture. Like, I don't feel like I learned anything else from her that I couldn't have just read in my textbook, but I just found that that was it was interesting that she gave her story. And I can't help but think, like, what if somebody in my class had had an abortion? The tone of her voice, it was just a bit judgmental. It sounded like one of these savior stories where it's like, well, every baby deserves a home, that sort of thing. So even though some of this information, even like just to, as practitioners are learning this information, it can be sort of injected with this bias, right? So that's, that was my own experience with that. I was a bit taken aback by it. So I guess my point in sharing that as well is, like, you will have doctors, nurse practitioners who are in charge of providing care to those, these services, to those who are seeking it. And I mean, just because they see the worst case scenario doesn't mean that they're influenced by it, right? If they have this viewpoint, they may refuse to perform an abortion, yeah, even if it's a victim of rape. I wouldn't want to make that assumption, but it's possible, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and the other, like, policies that have been in place in some states where they're forcing, or I've talked about forcing a transvaginal ultrasound in order to, like, I mean, just that's so traumatic between the actual act of having to insert that instrument and then make that person listen to the heartbeat and all of that. It's just, it's re-traumatizing.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah. So destigmatize, if people feel like they are able to share their stories, do, but really, I feel it is just, it's awful, but the reality is, like, the people who are so set in their ways about this issue will have to have some experience that hits way too close to home, and it's probably going to have to be the worst case scenario for them to push through it. Or it's kind of performative, right? Like, some people might just want to, like, these politicians, and you've probably seen this, this kind of trope of, like, oh yeah, well, rich Republicans will always be able to get their daughters an abortion because they can afford it. They can fly them somewhere, right? So them being so, like, staunchly against abortion might be a performative thing so that they appear to be more in line with their party and that platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if somebody were to actually have this conversation with me, and this has come up with... I do still associate with people in my life who are very much the opposite of me politically, but those people who are, I don't want to say unavoidable, they are people who are my parents' friends, and that's just something that they over the years have agreed not to talk about. And I more and more just have... stepped away from my silence when they say things that I just can't process, that I just can't, like, sit still with. And that's been something where that's come up, and then I just say, oh, well, what about rape and incest? Like, just throwing that out there. I'm like, oh, well, of course not. Of course not. Like, okay, well, I guess you're throwing me that bone? Like, I don't know. Like, am I just supposed to be satisfied with that then?
Mm.
Like, okay, I guess at least you're not, like, the hardest of the core, but okay.
Yeah.
But, like, you should make some concessions when you're on, like, on a rant about it, I guess. I don't know. It's difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely sounds like reading more into the philosophy side of things, but no,
right?
But no, I think what I...
Yeah, it's like, what does make a human a human? And are we all inherently good or are we all inherently evil?
Well, Kaylee, I would love to say thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and opinions. I think what I love most about what I'm taking from this is the fact that that you shouldn't be silent if there is someone around you who you have some kind of connection with, to just have a chat and a discussion about figuring out where they fall on the line. Because I know that it seems like it can be a little confrontational, or that it can lead to a pretty heavy argument. But at the same time, what it actually allows the other person to do is to realize where they do stand on the issue, right? Because they may think that their mind is made up, but upon being questioned further, like, oh, you know what, maybe I don't actually feel this way about that topic or that decision. And I love that you're willing to have those conversations with people, even though it might, make you uncomfortable even to have those. So thank you again so much for offering all of your views and your insights. I think it's really awesome that you really are somebody who kind of just puts your money where your mouth is and goes out and does the things they put their mind to. So.
Oh, thanks. I try.
All right. And thank you for listening to Philita Talk with Lane Palmer.